Roadshow, episode number 340. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is with me here at the beautiful, palatial, expansive grounds of the Casa de Cole Coffee on, it's like clockwork, brother. It's not quite October yet. I always say April and October. I know people probably like, stop it with that. But I'm telling you, they're the best months of the year. And it's not quite October. It's September 30th as we sit down to do this on a Thursday afternoon. But the weather's dropping. It's about 80 degrees outside right now. You got the window open. Mm-hmm. I'm just, it's a beautiful Thursday afternoon in Las Vegas.
It's unreal. It is so nice right now. This is the time of year that, you know, you could finally turn off the AC for a little bit. It's still getting a little warm in the evenings, but this is the best. This is the time of the year where it feels so good and so comfortable. And it's now, it's almost the part. Some people, I had a conversation with somebody the other day, and you'll get a kick out of this, because they were like, oh, it's about that time of the year where I stop wearing shorts. And I thought of you, and I was, and I was like, stop
that time
wearing
of the year
shorts.
Does not exist.
I was like, nah, I tend to go pretty long when I wear the shorts. She's like, oh, then what do? You just put like a hoodie on? I'm like, no, not so much a hoodie. I'm more of a like, when it gets colder, I'll do like a pullover or something.
Yeah.
You know, I'll layer up. But then it's like,
I'll throw my Adidas track jacket on, you know what I mean?
The little track jacket. Those are always nice. That's the best part about here is if it does get a little cold, you just layer up a little bit.
Throw
a little extra layer. But you could always keep the layers off down below.
Dude, I'm telling you, so winter clothing in Las Vegas is, yes, you got to put on your little Adidas jacket, but you still wear your shorts and your flip-flops. You know what I mean? Like, that's the best. That's winter weather in Las Vegas, man.
I love it.
That's how you dress up. That is a nice one. I should say, as beautiful as the day is outside, how does it feel inside? You seemed a little under the weather when I got here this morning, man.
Are you talking about my late night Hachi visit? We get so rarely do we get days off. So last night I made a point to like, hey, let's just go have a couple drinks.
I mean, just one or two.
Yeah, you know, my Jameson and ginger goes down very, very easy. I haven't convinced the bar, the Copper Keg over there, the Copper Keg West, to install a PBR draft. I'm working on it. He thinks he's like, well, we have this whatever IPA and we have this. I was like, no. It's called PBR, Pabst Blue Ribbon. I was like, if you get it on the tap, I promise you, I will help you drink it.
I will personally go through this keg with you.
And he's like, I'll see what I can do. So then my usual go-to is a Jameson and ginger.
Sure.
You know, I love that stuff.
Go down smooth.
But then for some reason, lately, I used to get this is maybe silly, but I'd always get a shot of Jameson to back it up. But now I realized that really catapulted me to getting fucked up really, really quick.
Isn't that kind of the point?
You know, it is. So I switched it up recently, and I've been doing shots of tequila.
Look at this guy. Jameson and ginger and drinking shots of tequila.
I'm telling you, man. In my mind, I am a young 20-year-old man that just finding the taste of alcohol to be pleasing. But unfortunately, my body is much closer to a 60-year-old man. So this morning, I was rough. I didn't get out of bed till about 11 o'clock today.
It's a beautiful thing, though.
Dude,
you gotta do it every now and then.
Every once in a while. I don't recommend doing it often because the hurt lasts longer.
We're getting old, man. We're getting old.
The hurt lasts longer. But it was fun. But yeah, I mean, so then I ended up going out and had some late night yakitori, like meat skewers and stuff at this place called Hachi. And they had like the honey toast. It was like my fun little drunk tourist night. You know, it was like, oh, let's go to this place. But I didn't realize how late it was until I got back later on. And I was like, oh, my goodness, it is late. And then the part of me, instead of just saying, oh,
it's the
hey,
best part about Vegas,
though,
right? Next thing, it's like 4 a.m. and you have no idea.
Yeah. I mean, it's just you could go as hard as you want or you can go slightly hard like I did. So I got home. I don't know. It had to be probably 1:30 or 2 or something like
bad.
That. So no, we can go much, much harder. But I would be fearful for how I would look now if I would if I went any longer. But yeah, it was a good night. But yeah, I was feeling it.
You deserve it. Look, last week was a crazy week, man. The International Fight Week, of course, not quite what it used to be in terms of how much stuff was going on, but still a busy week. And I did want to say I really did. I did enjoy the time at the Hall of Fame induction ceremony, man. We just did the red carpet, actually just watched the ceremony on TV. We're not allowed to film the ceremony itself, so there's really no reason to be in the building. So I actually, you know, went home and watched it on Fight Pass just like everybody else. But, I think it's kind of one of those things. I think the UFC Hall of Fame is a little bit like the World MMA Awards, where people go, well, what does it really mean? What does it really mean? And I would say, I think the UFC Hall of Fame would take on a lot more meaningful impact if they had a physical Hall of Fame, like whether it be in a hotel. I would say maybe the T-Mobile Arena, since they are official partners with T-Mobile Arena, like maybe you could do something there. I think certainly like in one of the hotels, one of the strip hotels would be awesome. I would think on the corporate campus would be awesome, except that then you got to deal with the security of bringing the public in and out.
I was just even thinking, like, you know, they want to develop that land in the middle, building a hotel.
I thought about that, too.
If they want to even put it in a lobby, but if they want to keep the hotel private, they still don't want people to go in there.
Right.
But if they're going to build something, it would be interesting or neat if they could just put aside little building or attachment to the hotel property.
Or like one place that the public can go.
Just
everything's sealed off, but this one part right here, the public can go. And, you know, you could make it a money-making opportunity if you wanted to, like, sell tickets, or you could just make it like a fan thing, or if you just want to stop by. I don't know how most Hall of Fames are. They probably sell tickets, but not, like, super expensive. I don't.
Yeah, I mean, because remember, we've been to
the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which I thought was so cool, man.
The NFL Hall of Fame, I think, is the same thing as well. I don't know. I think there's a small fee.
It's like you charge a little bit, but it's not like a ton of money.
Right.
Again, it's not like an event ticket.
I mean, you're really just going in and looking at old pictures and memorabilia. So
I loved our day at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
man,
cool.
I thought it was so cool. Like, see,
it's
like
very
the guitars and the outfits and stuff like that. And you could see that too, man. I mean, with the UFC, as you said, there'd probably be a lot of photos, but, you know, like, this is the canvas from that event, or this was the fight kit that so and so wore that night, or, you know, whatever the case may be. I mean, I think fans would love that stuff, and I think it would make it mean more, because I think right now, you know, and I think you know, people still are like, well, what's the induction process? Just if they're Dana's friend, they get in or whatever, and that's not exactly how it works, but Dana does have final approval, which is why guys like Frank Shamrock aren't in there. But I don't know, man. I had such a good time, because to me, it's that whole, like, seeing Mark Coleman there and Mark Coleman talking about, you know, Kevin Randleman and you know, seeing Boss Rutten there and seeing Hoist Gracie there, like, continuing to honor these guys well after their fighting career. I think it's cool to allow them to still be a part of this fraternity, you know what I mean, to be a part of this club. And, like I said, I think the Pioneer Wing, honestly, is and it's funny because Boss Rutten said it, but I agree with him. He said, well, I think Boss said he thinks the Pioneer Wing is the most unique, because, you know, that's only a locked in period of time. Like, people can continue to get in and get in for years from now, but only a handful will ever be part of the Pioneers. To me, though, I think the Pioneer Wing is like the best or most important, almost, in a lot of ways, because you're educating people about the history. You know, there's so many people that know nothing about Kevin Randleman, you know what I mean? And for him to get in, and by the way, I thought his wife stole the show, man. If you haven't watched the induction ceremony, go watch his wife speak on UFC Fight Pass, because, A, she's hilarious, and she stole the show, because I think her spirit and her passion for Kevin Randleman is awesome to this day. But, you know, Mark Coleman had said that they had had a conversation together, because I asked him, I was like, man, is this bittersweet? You know, this is your guy, you know what I mean? This is your best friend, and he's in, but obviously he's not here to see it. And Mark had said that, you know, look, I spoke with his wife, and, you know, we made sure that this is going to be a positive thing. You know, we're not going to be sad about the fact that it's not going to be here. We're going to celebrate his life and celebrate what he meant to the sport. And they did that. You know what I mean? She kept it positive, and she could have been up there in tears about losing her husband at an early age. And instead, you know, she was really celebrating his life. And I don't know, man. I'm sure a lot of people are just like, yeah, whatever. It's the UFC Hall of Fame. It's a fake Hall of Fame. It's whatever. But, man, every year as we continue to go, I start to look more and more forward to those nights to see everybody that's there. And I don't know, man. I thought it was that was probably one of the highlights of last week for me. It wasn't quite International Fight Week, but it's getting there again.
Well, even that stuff out at the park, whereas before, you know, it used to be at, like, one of the convention centers or something. Everything was sort of gathered. All the fans would go there, and they felt like they were actually going to an event. You know, you're going to this building. You're taking part of the process. Here, when I realized, when you look at all that stuff outside of the park, it looks like just sort of not decorations, the right word, but just little pop-up things that are sort of there.
Right.
But in a way, that is the outdoor. It's the new outdoor version of what used to be inside, like the convention thing. The meet and greets. Yep. The punch this then that.
It was spaced throughout, like, all the little restaurants and bars that are right there by the Park MGM and T-Mobile, which is, I'm sure the businesses, appreciate the foot traffic. And it was kind of fun that one day where we sat there and, like, fans were coming up and talking to us. And
they talked to you, actually.
Dropping off. All of us.
I just sat there and watched.
They were like, cold coffee. Oh, is that
John Morgan again?
But anyway, cold coffee. Yeah, I will say thank you to everybody that came up and took pictures and said hello and all that. And thank you to those that dropped off a few frosty beverages here and there. That was a nice. It was fun hanging out amongst the people, man. It was good.
Yeah.
We enjoyed hanging out with it. It was a good week, man. It was a fun week. It's fun because it's just been so long since this damn COVID thing.
Yeah.
Man.
It felt like we had not that it didn't feel like Vegas had opened up a while back, but certainly felt like we had turned a corner to the point to where things were getting back to, like, what we remember, like just large random amounts of drunk people walking around by each other, partaking in fun shit, doing meet and greets. I mean, like, when was the last time that people said, hey, actually come meet somebody instead of, stay 6 feet away from everybody?
That was the first time. That's the first one. This was the first time they brought all the fighters back.
And so that was really cool. But just to your point, one last thing about that, the Hoist Gracie. I mean, like, it's one of those things that it's always cool seeing those cats.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you're right. I mean, there's only one set of people that are going to be the pioneers, you know, that brought it on. And those guys are always so good to be around. When I did a base trip when we were covering Bellator in Hawaii, Hoist was there and went around the troops, and he was so good with dealing with the troops, and you can still see what he means to people when they see him.
He's a rock star, dude. He's
a
rock star.
Literally a rock star in the MMA community, and it's so cool that he can kind of – he has a role, if you will, in being that ambassador to what they did, and it's a – for this to be that sort of catalyst that gives them an opportunity to get out in front of people, you love it. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, even what was one of the neat things, and I joked, remember that little kid that came up to you to get an autograph signed?
Yeah.
That's like the next generation of like the kids that have been introduced to the sport.
That have been watching like their whole life
their
already.
Their whole life.
Know?
It's existed, this whole thing. But they're going to go and they're going to see. And if they haven't already, if they're that big a fan, I'm sure they went back and already watched that. But they can literally see this guy that helped start it all. And, you know, and then you see the love of MMA growing in their eyes. So it's super, super cool to see that stuff. And it's funny because I remember he came up to you at the bar and I was like, are you old enough to be in here, kid? I was like, what's going on here? But yeah, man, International Fight Week is a lot of fun. But man, this stretch of events is becoming mind-numbing. I'm not going to lie.
Tuesday, Saturday, this two-week shit.
And it's not just like it's that. Because don't forget the weigh-ins on two of the other days and then a media day thrown in there.
Yeah.
So literally 6 days, 5-6 days of the week, we're heading over to the UFC in some aspect to do something. And I'm telling you, I am burning the F out.
It's fair.
Hence Jameson and Tequila Nights.
It's fair. You mentioned the Contender Series. I did want to mention, too, about the Contender Series. A couple things. First off, as you said, there's a lot going on. But I did think it was cool when we showed up to the Dana White's Contender Series weigh-ins at the Residence Inn, everybody was still buzzing about Volkanovski. I don't remember us showing up for a weigh-in or whatever, and everybody like, oh my god, how about that fight still? You know what I mean? Like, that just goes to show you what amazing main event that was at
that
UFC 266.
Was crazy.
It was so cool for everybody to get there and still be buzzing about it. And I don't know if you got to see it. Volkanovski and the whole City Kickboxing crew, they were at the Raiders game on Sunday as well, which Buffer announced the game again. Started the game off, and then they showed Volkanovski on the screen, and it's so great because we're talking about what it takes for this guy to get respect. He's a guy that we've always liked, right? Not only as a fighter, we've always said, hey, this guy is destined for greatness, but we've also just liked him as a person. He's a great great fun dude.
How can you not like the dude? I mean, he's never done anything to do anything bad towards the
sport.
He's
a fun dude. I mean, remember his shtick in the beginning used to be like getting a new suit for every like media day or whatever. But it was funny because they were just like the, you know, $200 suits. You know, now he's got the real deal. But anyway, he's got great personality and stuff.
Is a $200 suit not a real suit?
I mean, no, it's just kind of what's what I pay for.
I was like, man, I can't remember the last time I had to. I think for a wedding, I dropped a little bit more than that. Besides that, I'm like,
oh yeah, I don't try to pay much for that. But so anyway, he's on the screen. And it's great because, you know, he had the belt over his shoulder, which that was cool. You know, just showing it. You know, he still had the marks on his face and all that. But what made it was he had one of those big, dumb foam fingers on. And he's not – and instead of just holding it up like the big number one, he's pounding his chest with it going like, let's fucking go. You know, it's just like the scene, the foam – I don't know whose idea it was to pick – if somebody told him to pick it up or if he just picked it up on his own.
Probably just picked up. Knowing him, he probably picked it up.
Right. He probably just picked it up. It made it hilarious, man. So it was cool to see just that reaction, as you said, because we're spending a lot of time covering UFC events. But to see everybody that buzz was pretty cool. As far as the fights itself, I don't know if everybody here watches every Dana White's Contender Series. Like I kind of get if you don't. You know, I think it's a lot. I think they're fun, but yes, I get it. Not everybody gets to spend their entire life covering MMA like we do. But I will say, if you don't watch Dana White's Contender Series, go watch this past week's episode, if for nothing else than to see Daniel Zalauber versus Lucas Almeida. That, to me, I think was one of the best fights we've ever seen on Contender Series, man. Those dudes were absolutely banging, man. And I don't know, man. That was one of my favorite fights ever. Just stand-up war, momentum shifts back and forth. A little shocked that Lucas Almeida didn't get a UFC contract off the loss. You know, he came in, it was an undefeated Mexican fighter and Daniel Zalauber and an undefeated Brazilian fighter in Lucas Almeida. Zalauber ends up taking home a unanimous decision win, 29-28 across the board. But it is 15 minutes of nonstop action. And I thought for sure Almeida was going to get a contract as well. But I guess Dana told him, hey, go get one win. I guess basically anywhere. Like, I mean, I don't know. Can he go face somebody that's like 2-10 next to get into the UFC?
I don't know why he doesn't just say, hey, we're going to try to bring him back later. I mean, it was probably, you know, maybe the hurdles to get him here was tough.
Yeah,
so they didn't want to go through it again. They were just like, just go do another one. And I don't know. It's weird because when he did that at the very beginning of the year, now I think we all assume like that it's going to happen again. Maybe it was a real freak occurrence. The fact that he actually gave one to a loser.
Yeah, because this season was the first time somebody lost got a contract.
Ever seen it. You know, so I just don't know if maybe we just need to get that mindset back in our heads that, hey, if this guy is a loser, more than likely they're not going to get a contract.
Because he did say that night that he thought the loser won. He thought the decision was wrong. Here, I think we all thought the decision was fair. Mm-hmm. It was clear that Almeida won the first round. Zalauber won round two. Three was close, but I thought he won it. You know, so it seemed like – I know I scored it 29-28. All three judges had it the same way. So you're right. Maybe it's, you know, and maybe it's because he thought that one was controversial.
Yeah. And we've been riding him a little hard. Well, not hard. Whatever. But, I mean, about the amount of contracts.
It's probably true, right?
He's seeing it. He's feeling it. Because, I mean, it's hard to deny when you have a huge roster. And now, he used to always say, oh, well, I got 400 and something. Now that number seems to be 600, 700. You know, that number is much bigger. But it's hard to not think that he hears when people say, hey, you know, you're bringing all these low contract fighters in here and you're not giving fights to the bigger ones. You know, at some point, that's got to start adding up, regardless of how you want to spin it, and regardless if you say F you, if you think it's not right, I'm just go start your own promotion. It's not that, or everybody would have a promotion. But I feel like maybe that now, after seeing how the past couple weeks, I think there's been a couple that were close that we sort of joked that the loser was going to get it. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen it.
Yeah,
so I'm starting to think that now it's going back to kind of how it was. Unless there is something, like you said, something controversial where Dana's just like, F you, judges, you were way crazy.
I'm giving this guy a shot.
I think now we're going to probably get back to the point where losers aren't going to get one. And the fact that we almost assume that if you're winning, you're getting one, the way that it's kind of been. He didn't give one to the heavyweights.
Yeah, Rizvan Kuniev, who's a champ of Habib's organization.
I mean, it wasn't the greatest, but still, I mean, this is a division that that you could tell they have a need.
Usually if you're a heavyweight, you win, you're in.
You win, and that's it. You're in. But this one, he was like, I'm just wasn't really impressed. I'm like, okay. Like, it did feel like he was being a bit stingy because every week, it's just been, you get a contract.
I did wonder, like, I don't know if you were paying attention to his pre-fight package on Kuniev.
I did not.
But so obviously it was translated, but one of the lines was, I think Contender Series is below me.
Oh, I remember hearing that. Yeah.
I think Contender Series is below me, but I'll go show that they need me. I know Dana watches those packages because he's released them before on his social media because he likes them. He likes his work. But, like, I wonder if part of me was like, oh, below you, are we? You know what I mean? You didn't go out there and just...
Below me, motherfucker. You ain't getting a job.
So that was... But I will say this. But I agree. It was not the greatest performance of all time. It was kind of a lumbering, plodding heavyweight where you're like, dude, people want to watch this. So I get that.
Yeah.
I was a little bit surprised by Carol...
Buhayo.
I
was really surprised. Because, I thought that kid was going to get one.
And Aaron Jeffrey is a CFFC champ, so I've seen Aaron Jeffrey fight before, and that is a lot about the way he fights. It's pressure, but a lot of clinch game, you know, kind of work you in tight, and you know, while it wasn't effective enough for the win, it did slow Buhayo down a little bit. And so Buhayo didn't get to show a lot. But in the moments he did have space, I think you can tell that guy has talent. That dude has talent, and he speaks English as a Brazilian, which is good. You know, he talks about embracing the promotional side of it. So I was a little bit surprised Buhayo didn't. But to Dana's point, he said, you know, listen, just because the guy's clinching you, you know, you got to find a way to get out of there. And I guess that's fair, but I was still a little bit surprised. He did go with, of course, Ihor Poteria. Butchered that one. I'll get it down eventually when you're in the UFC. I apologize. But that kid's got a little swagger coming from the Ukraine, right? Came in there, got the sunglasses
on. Where the party at?
Yeah, he had the autographed bottle of Hallerhead talking about, let's get the party, let's get going. Sounds like he'll probably drop down to middleweight. You know, he doesn't cut much weight to get 205, so it sounds like he'll probably get down to middleweight. But anyway, if you didn't watch it, I'm telling you, go watch that Zell Uber fight against Almeida. That was probably my favorite Contender Series fight of all time, I think. It's just the one that stands out to me most right now. If I'm missing one, I apologize.
Feel free to remind me.
There's been some good ones, but I really loved that one. And then we got the epic Dana White rant.
Then we got one of the best Dana White ones.
Dana White, I'm sure by now everybody's checked this out. If you haven't, obviously we've got it on YouTube. But Dana White went in hard on Oscar De La Hoya. Mm-hmm. He had information sheets and handouts for us to show.
Brought
props, man. I was like, hilarious to see. Now, of course, you know, there's people that are still always going to argue against fighter pay, and I get it, man. That, you know, I do, you know, Dana's points are fair, and then people's points are fair too. You know, as Dana always points out, like, look, man, we got all these other things that we have to pay for too. We have salaries, we have buildings, we have PIs, we have you know, for the years, for a long time, the cost of litigation and stuff like that to get everything legalized. You know, as you said, we've got USADA, there are more things than just, you know, I think sometimes when people talk about that, like, hey, man, they're only paying, you know, 16% to 18% to fighters, I think people are assuming, does that mean they're profiting 80%? Like, no, there's still a lot of other expenses. So Dana's points are right. You know, fighters are making more than you think they are. A lot of the stuff, you know, we hear about these things. As he says, he's right. When he says, look, these fighters can tell you what they make, they don't want to. You know, and then, you know, we hear these stories now where Daniel Cormier or Chris Weidman or whoever, they'll come out and talk. Yeah, I remember when they gave me that first $1 million bonus check, you know, the first time I ever got a $1 million bonus check or whatever. It's like, whoa, that wasn't reported on your income, you know. So he is right. I will say, though, that, you know, I think 16 to 18% does sound low to me, too. Like, I would like to see them continue to go. But, you know, it's just – it's interesting because, you know, none of the figures are public. But anyway, we could sit here and talk for hours about that. Yeah. But he went off on Oscar De La Hoya in an all-time classic rant. That was probably one of the better ones of all time, I think.
It was awesome. It was awesome. I mean, and even just to get him to go about it, and then, you know, just hearing how it started, why he feels the way he does. I mean, and it was just, it was just.
Because I had kind of forgotten about that, to be honest.
We all forgot about it.
So for anybody that didn't see or doesn't know, I think it was you that asked him, right? Because where did this beef begin? And I had kind of totally forgotten about it, exactly how it began as well. Because I think we were talking about that.
We talked about it, like,
and I was
the,
like,
day before. We were trying,
like,
to remember.
I can't really remember.
I know myself. I thought it was relating to boxing back when he had arguments with Bob Arum. I was like, I'm sure something came.
Tied in
and
there,
they,
what have you.
You know, somebody took somebody's side, blah, 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 blah. Because when it happened, you know, and listen to Dana say it, It's in the interview. It's awesome. But he said it all started back at the McGregor Mayweather when Oscar came out and said, "Don't buy this," because he had his own
promotion,
that's
right, cause
an own event going on with like Canelo or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, I don't think it was that same day, but I think it was like that same month or whatever.
Right.
Or, you know, it was around there. So, you know, a lot of people aren't going to be able to afford two pay per views in a month.
Right.
So, you know, he's trying to. So he was like, "Don't. You know, don't buy this. This is a disgrace to boxing."
Right.
And Dana, who said, "Dude, I used to promote his fights as a fighter. I used to promote his fights as a promoter. Like, I'd use my own social media to say, hey, man, look, check out Oscar's fight, da, da, da," which he used to do that a lot.
You know,
he never was shy about talking about him and Lorenzo would go to boxing matches and stuff. So, and then he said when De La Hoya did that, or said, "Don't buy my product," you know, don't, then that's when he was like.
Yeah, he took it like a stab in the back.
Yeah.
He took it personal. And what's crazy, because as he said that, I remember feeling like I had the memory of when that happened, that we were like, damn.
Yeah.
Like, shit's weird between these two now.
Yep.
And, but then you forget years later, you know, because there were multiple times when things would pop up, and I was always like, oh, Oscar's a cokehead, yada, yada, yada. You know, you just kind of forgot about it. But it was interesting to hear him just sort of re-clarify. So there was no doubt, because, yeah, we were just talking about the day before. But, yeah, I mean, it's one of those. It was one of the rare times when sometimes we'll ask Dane about something and it feels to him like, you know, maybe we poke it and he humors it a little bit and then he moves on. But this one, he was fully ready to go all in.
He had props.
And it was so amazing, because when I realized after we had broached like the 15-minute mark on this thing, I was like, oh my God, he's
definitely one of the longest rants of all time.
Going, you know? But yeah, it was fantastic. And I mean, even outside of Tuesday, so we get these great fights that half the time we that are normally in the back get to go out front and kind of watch the fights. Then we're also
it's
rewarded.
Fun for you as a videographer, right? Because you're usually stuck in the back doing interviews.
Stuck in the back
you
doing
whatever.
You actually
get to come out and watch fights.
Could come watch fights, and then we were rewarded with probably the most Dana interview that we've seen in a while.
The comments were funny, where people were just like, "This is the Dana I missed."
Oh, dude, it's true. I mean, but you got to think. I think we all thought that after the Endeavor buy, that we weren't going to see vintage Dana, like those days of him going completely all in on somebody. I think we thought those days were over. We realized that. I mean, that's not true. He still does it, but very rarely. I wouldn't say that he's more reserved these days. I think he's got a lot of maybe irons in the fire that, you know, his mind is distracted in certain things. So it's good that when we get him, when he's fully engaged and willing to just sort of like, you know, open the curtain and give us some like really gems.
Mm-hmm.
And this one was by far the most memorable one that we've had in
a long time.
A long, long,
long time.
Time.
Long time.
Long time. And you said he even hit you up.
Yeah, yeah.
Afterwards, he's like, "Hey,
but he was like, yeah, what'd
you enjoy
think?
That?"
He did. He reached out to me. He's like, "What'd you think about that?" I was like, "Bro, that was
good.
That was epic." I was like, "If you want to bring us more of those, come on with it. Come on with it." Yeah, him and I were talking about some other stuff. I'll actually get to that later, but it's not MMA related. But I'll share a little something. All right, listen. Well, speaking of Dana, I did want to get your take as well on this John Jones thing. So we talked about the greatness of the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about how much fun we had that night, and then of course we know that later that night things didn't go all that fun in the John Jones family. I don't know what the UFC reaction to. Simon Simano wrote a column for MMA Junkie where he argued now is the time for the UFC to release John Jones. And of course, Simon Simano is not alone in that. I'm just saying he put that statement on our site. And I know a lot of people feel that way. I'm really torn on it, man, because I don't know what the UFC can do and what they should do. I mean, as a business, first of all, it's not an employee, right? So I mean, you got to treat them a little bit differently. The rules and how you can handle things are a little bit different, and what the liability is and that sort of thing. I guess there is kind of a moral thing, though. I mean, the guy continues to get in trouble, but I don't know. I mean, in a business sense, he's not really impacting your business. Like, I don't think there's going to be many people. I mean, do you think there's people who are like, I'm not going to watch the UFC because they still employ that John Jones guy?
It does give fuel for somebody to say this is the kind of business. I mean, you know, as much as Dana likes to say, it's a business where people go in there and smash each other's face. They're going in there fighting. You know, it's not sweet and it's not whatever. But when you get to the point of where there's, you know, alleged domestic violence, you know, and you're seeing pictures and you're seeing and hearing stories of, you know, girlfriends and spouses bloodied up and, you know, and you're hearing all these things, it's hard to not think at some point that somebody on the outside is going to be like, this is the kind of people that you want to deal with. You're willing to make money while still, you know, employing these people. And I mean, all these athletes sign and do the whole athlete code of conduct and stuff, you know, where they've said in the past, you know, they can't disparage the UFC, that they are representatives of the UFC. So regardless of whether employees or not, I mean, they do represent the thing. It was the same thing back when, remember, was it Miguel Torres made like a rape
The rape
comment,
van
a
joke.
rape van joke or something like that? They didn't. Th they thought that that was pretty serious enough that where they're like, all right, see you, kid. You know, it's hard to not think that you don't cut ties with somebody if it comes out and it's all shown, which it seems to be,
That's
that
to me.
abuse is.
That's what I think. Is it if so? And I'll be honest. I don't remember all the details of it, but I do remember the Ray Rice video in the elevator, right? Where, you know, I think, like, you know, people knew there was an incident, and people were like, okay, but that's okay. And then once you saw the video where it was like, I think
It's not he
he
said, she
knocked out
said,
a woman and
when
then
you see.
dragged her body. Yeah, I think if video comes out of this stuff and the UFC still says, well, it's the fight business. And I know that sounds hypocritical of me to say that, though. You know what I mean? Like, well, we know there was an incident, but if we see video of it now, we really got to address it. I know how shitty that sounds, how hypocritical that sounds.
Yeah.
But I just think that if the UFC, there's a video that comes out and Dana sits there in front of us and it shows him knocking out a woman and dragging her, you know, and maybe it's not that bad, but, you know, we see something that violent.
Yeah.
And Dana sits up there in front of us and says, "Wow, it's the fight business. I got 650 people on my roster. What am I supposed to do?" I don't think you can do that.
You can't.
And I know that sounds hypocritical because if the incident happened, the incident happened. But
remember, we're talking in terms of will it influence, will it affect the UFC? Will it cause harm? It's one thing to hear somebody does something and you're like, and you imagine it in your head. Everybody can imagine what I imagine might look different than what you imagine it to look like. But when you see it, it's hard to not internalize what you see. And that immediately is just going to start a little slow burning
That would
wildfire.
impact the business, right?
It
I mean,
will impact.
I mean, can you
You
imagine
have to
the
think.
negative publicity that the UFC would receive if they're
Every.
like, they signed off on this?
And think about the other. There's a lot of news organizations that won't touch anything if it's just like he said, she said, you know. They might see, they'll put the picture up of John, his mugshot or something. That's something. But when you have footage of it, what news organization isn't going to use that?
Everybody will pick it up.
Everybody's going to put it, and everybody's going to cut it. And then it's going to be on them to decide, okay, wow, yes, we can really make money off this kid. We're able to do this. But also, everybody's looking at us like, what kind of organization pays these people? What kind of organization wants to put this guy's poster up on a 30-foot billboard, you know, hanging across the highway so everybody can say when they drive by, oh, hey, look, oh, there's that guy that, you know, did this and that, you know. I would think it'd have to. I mean, and that's the kind of thing, you know, as much as he wants to say, oh, well, we let the courts play out. I mean, if you get the footage, it's going to play out very
I was
hard
gonna say, at that point,
for him in the courts.
Well, at that point, do you even need to wait on what happens?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we already see what's happening, right? I mean, his fiance in the police report wouldn't, you know, nothing happened, but she's got a bloody lip.
Yeah.
And not...
Well, if there's video stuff,
That's
she
what I'm
doesn't
saying.
have to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, they have the proof that they need, you know?
That's a shitty situation.
It
because
is.
I
It's
think,
terrible.
I've always said, to me, Jon Jones is the greatest of all time. He's dominated his division for a decade. He's beat former champions. Yes, he's had a couple tests here and there, but not many. You know what I mean? To me, he's the greatest of all time. And this just stuff continues to happen, man. It's not
Yeah.
At some point when it continues to happen, it's not unfortunate incidents around you. You know what I mean? It's you. And I don't know, man. I'm okay with the UFC, I guess, sitting back and saying, hey, we're going to wait to see how this plays out. I get that.
I mean, they've established that as that's like the precedent. That's what they do,
right?
You know, so it makes sense that they wouldn't, you know, sort of differ from that. I mean, look at the same thing. Like a lot of people, you know, when you know, even looking at Hardy, he's also another guy that's like, you know, I've never been convicted,
right?
You know, I've never, you know, I've never this, you know, So they have that little legal leeway, whereas that could have been easily one where they're like, okay, no, we're just not going to pick this cat up, you know? So I mean, there's sort of the precedent for them because they want to see how it plays out in the
Just
courts.
torn. I'm just. I. Because I even as
But
I hear the words come out of my mouth, like I know how hypocritical that sounds. Like we. I mean, I do think we do need to see it play. I guess that's what I'm assuming is I'm assuming the video is bad. Maybe the video is not that bad. Maybe the incident wasn't that bad. You know what I mean? Like I mean, if somebody's bleeding, I'm assuming something happened. You know what I mean?
right.
But I guess maybe that's why I'm saying if there's video of him knocking her out or something, clearly you gotta. You know, get at that point you got to get rid of the guy. But if there's not, you know, but we know there was an incident. I don't know, man. It's just such a shitty situation. I wish John wouldn't continue to put himself in these positions, and I wish somebody around him would get him help, man. Because he's an incredibly talented athlete. He does amazing things in the octagon. He's the greatest of all time. And I just hate that we have to have these discussions over and over about the guy. And I just wish somebody. I say get them help, but I guess you can't get help unless you want help yourself, right? I mean, you can't
Right.
force somebody to be a better person. You can't force somebody to not, you know, deal with substances or whatever the case may be. You know, I just, it's just so maddening, man. I just hate that we're seeing this play out again, man. That's, I guess that's all I got with that. I feel bad for his kids too, man.
That,
I
yeah.
think about my kid, I thought about that, like my son having to ask for, you know, somebody to call the police about me or something like that, man. Like I just All right, listen, the schedule carries on. It's a fight week that well, it's a fight week for me too. It's just a different fight week. I will be a part of CFFC 101. That's right. Cage Fury Fighting Championships is out in Bensalem, Pennsylvania, Parks Casino on Saturday morning. Pumi Okuda is putting his flyweight title on the line against Miguel Diaz. That was actually supposed to be Santo Curatolo, and then Santo Curatolo got the call up to the Contender Series. He had a tough matchup there. Things didn't go his way, but Miguel Diaz will be there. So myself and CM Punk will be on the call, 1:30 p.m. Eastern time for the main card. So we're actually serving as like the afternoon matinee lead-in to the UFC event that's right here in Las Vegas, that of course Cole Coffee will be covering. That is UFC Fight Night 193, Santos versus Walker. Big light heavyweight matchup there, Thiago Santos versus Johnny Walker, a couple Brazilians. You know, we spoke to both these guys. I did take part in the media day, even though I won't be covering the fight. Kind of an interesting position for both guys, right? Like Johnny Walker, you know, had the losses, got the win, then injured his bicep and has been sitting out. It's been 13 months for Johnny Walker. Johnny Walker, a dude that like had all the momentum in the world, you know, came in three performances of the nights in a row. We're like, this dude's the next star. Then had a couple setbacks, has this injury, and now he's in this position to face. You know, he's back in the main event. He's working out in SBG Ireland, you know, and wants to make a big statement. He says, "Hey, man, I have matured. You know, I was everything that I accomplished before. Now I wasn't even handling myself as a professional. I was just a, you know, kind of half-assing it. Now I'm taking everything serious. And if that's true." If he was half-assing it coming in with those three performances of the nights, and now he's a professional, damn, that's amazing.
You know who else said that?
Who's that?
In the day, back in the day, John Jones. Not that I would consider Walker to be on Jones's level, but
Right.
Jones got by
well,
just
and that
on
is
sheer
true, and that is
athleticism.
true.
He
He was
would
partying all the time.
partying, half-assing through practice. He would say he was like, "Eh, I wasn't really even going, you know, whatever in practices until he really focused," and then we saw what happened. If any fraction of that is the same thing for Johnny, that's gonna be good.
That'd be amazing.
It's gonna be good because he's his athleticism, he's got youth on his side, he's got just a crazy cool personality. I mean, this he has everything about him that could be a superstar.
Speaking good English now?
Speaking wonderful English.
That's
I
great.
mean, it's something.
You know, it's funny, man. I just every time I think about that, I think about the great Brian Stan. When he was still in his doing his commentary duties, I remember him telling me one time that one of the things that helped him realize it was time to step aside was working out with John Jones.
Yeah,
and he was like, John would come in like still drunk from the night before and just fuck me up.
Yeah,
he's like, why am I even in this sport? Like, this dude's not even trying, and he's whipping my ass. He's like, I am not made for this. So that story always cracks me up. All right, but on the other side, Thiago Mojeta Santos as well, and Thiago Santos. I don't want to say they have the same story, but in some ways they kind of do, right? Where Thiago says, like, look, you know, he's had a couple setbacks as well. But he even says, and I want to make it clear, like, he makes it clear, like, I'm not trying to make excuses for my recent losses, but he's basically said, like, listen, man, I came back from the horrific knee injuries. You know all that we had to come back from. And I came back, and I just wasn't 100% physically or mentally. You know, you watch my lack of kicks. You watch my lack of movement.
Yep.
Like, I he's like, and again, this is not a guy that makes excuses. This is a guy that's just being honest and saying, look, man, I just, if I'm being honest with you, I wasn't 100%. I could sit here and tell you I was, but I wasn't. And you could see it. You know, look how little I kick. Look how bad my movement is. He's like, now I'm at 100% physically and mentally. And he's a guy, too, that, like, if he's operating at 100%.
Super dangerous.
So I'm torn on this one, man. In my staff picks, I picked Johnny Walker. But I'm just going to be honest, man. I am anything but confident in this one. I think I'm split right down the middle on this one, man.
Yeah, I actually picked Johnny. It's funny. I think I picked Johnny because I thought you were going to pick Tiago.
Oh, you're trying to make up ground
on
me,
I was trying to make
up
ground, but that policy has not worked for me the past couple weeks. I've just made the gap much wider
so
than
funny.
What it is. I don't think I can catch up to you now, which is good. That means the roadshow again
keep
is going
that
to
knock
win.
On wood, but I am in the lead in the 2020 staff picks.
By a lot, which is good. Yeah, I'm torn. I mean, I think part of it just seeing Tiago, I completely respect what after watching what he did with Jones and what he put himself through and that no quit mentality, his legs weren't even holding up for him, but he had no quit in him. It's like, how can you not just absolutely just admire this guy's heart? But I just feel like he hasn't been the same since then.
And, I agree.
And as much as he says he's back 100% or whatever, I feel out of these two individuals who had the most potential to turn something around and look much better this time after the time away, it's Johnny Walker.
Right.
So if he's able to, and if he said he's really, really focused, and he's, you know, SBG Ireland, say what you want about them, they have some killers. They have some good. I think for the people that the way that they coach and train, for the ones that it really resonates with them, they're amazing. They stand out and they're studs. So good on him to switch it up and try something different. So I'm looking forward to see what he's going to bring. I just think he has the most potential to surprise us in this bout because you know those last couple losses, it was almost just like, man, who is this kid? But when you hear that, you know, he wasn't approaching the fighting the right way, and we know that a lot of times it takes that loss. It takes something to get these guys to reevaluate how they're training, how they're living, how they're doing all this other stuff. And I think he realized, he probably bought into that, man, I'm not even really trying, and look at this, the UFC's pumping me up. I'm getting main events. I'm doing all this crazy shit. And then to realize, wow, I get these losses. Am I really that good? Am I really here? This is that moment where they have to face it. And if this is that point where, if he can come back and look great and beat Tiago, his name is immediately back in
Momentum's
the running.
Right there again.
It's right back at it, you know. So he's just a stud. I mean, both of these guys are freaks of nature physically. I mean, these guys, their size, he's 6'6", 82-inch reach. He's 29 fucking years old.
It's crazy.
I mean, like, he's an absolute monster, and he's only going to get – I mean, he's actually going to get bigger and stronger.
He's in his prime right now.
He's literally in his prime. It's so cool to see because this is one of those ones where if he gets the win, we're going to be talking Johnny Walker's name again over and over and over. And if he doesn't let that get to his head and he keeps the focus – I mean, we've said in the past, this kid is a future. He's a future champ at some point.
I think so.
And this would be that first step. It's just a matter of if he believes enough and he's done the work. We're gonna know for sure on Saturday. And if he comes out and just is amazing, then we're gonna be like, yep, I'll be right back on the future champ train.
I agree. I'm intrigued by this one. I'll definitely be watching it. I don't fly home until Sunday, so it's cool. We're doing the lead-in, like I said, into this UFC card, and then we'll actually be doing prelims. So I guess we'll call them, they'd be post-limbs for us, basically, but we're doing some of the local fighters after the main card ends on Fight Pass. So during the prelims of the UFC, we'll still be doing some live fights, but then I'll jump out to my hotel room and watch the rest of them. So
taking a page from the Bellator book.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Well, so it's an early start. So UFC Fight Pass wanted us to do a show ahead of time, but then we're like, but the casino – The casino doesn't want us done at 4 p.m. Yeah. Pacific. You know what I mean? They want people to go a little bit later, bring in the crowd. You know, obviously that's the reason they bring the fights in is to get people there. So we'll have the locals doing it afterwards. So it's going to be a fun setup. I'm kind of anxious to do it. But I just point that out to say everybody that supports us over at patreon.com/the MMA Roadshow for as little as $3 a month, we'll get, of course, exclusive access to that and a half show. So I will definitely put one of those together from Pennsylvania because I will be watching these fights. Just got to get my commentary duties out the way first. Co-main event in the UFC card, Kyle Daukaus versus Kevin Holland. I'm intrigued by this card, or by this fight, I should say, as well. I think this card has some sneaky good fights on it. Kyle Daukaus, of course, CFFC vet. I'm certainly interested in him. Kevin Holland, you know, he's taking his time off, right? He's he traveled to Hendrickstan with Johnny Hendricks to work on his wrestling.
So funny.
Kevin was an absolute trip. If you want to see some a fun scrum, go check out his pre-fight interview with us. He was, I think, probably the highlight of the day in terms of, you know, just coming in with the energy that you expect. But this is a big one for him. You know, I mean, Kyle Daukaus, you know, obviously we've seen his brother Chris, what Chris is doing. Chris has now got this main event with Derek Lewis. I mean, what a meteoric rise it's been for him. Mm-hmm. Kyle had not had the same success so far in the UFC. He's 1-2 in the UFC. But the names that he lost to, Brendan Allen, Phil Hawes, I mean, we're not talking about chumps there, you know what I mean?
Yeah, good fights.
And Kyle Daukaus is somebody that has a decent level of grappling, you know what I mean? Which I thought this matchup was intriguing for Holland because it's a step down in terms of, you know, name recognition and that sort of thing. But, you know, the UFC didn't give him a, you know, hey, we'll hand you a pure striker because we know they're still testing him. You know, they still want to see what Kevin Holland has. So I'm really, really intrigued to see what Kevin can do here because this is a big one.
Imagine losing to Phil Hawes, whatever, and getting rewarded by getting Kevin Holland.
It's the strength.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yo, what they've been doing to Kyle Daukaus is crazy, man.
They literally gave him a tougher fight after a loss.
Yes.
That doesn't make any sense. I mean, boy.
And Brendan Allen's no joke either.
Yeah, I mean, credit to Chris Daukaus. I mean, like, his hands in his last fight.
Oh,
so
amazing.
Fantastic. So fantastic. And I love the fact that dude's a cop.
Yeah.
And now he's becoming this killer heavyweight. And you know some of that mentality has got to rub off on the brother as well. But, man, it's just crazy to think that because Kevin Holland is, you know, last time we saw him, there were a lot of questions because it was just like the jawing too much in the cage, just talking to guys outside of it. The lack of pulling the trigger on something.
Is he taking this serious?
You know, I feel like we are going to see the Kevin that because there's no high the high ranked guys that mm-hmm. to where his head can get in play and maybe there is any self doubt or whatever. I'm expecting the Kevin that we're all saying was a future contender, you know, to show up, and this poor kid. Daukaus, who just lost to a stud and Phil, gets this. But this, I mean, like you said, if this is a matter of the ground game, and did Kevin get that squared away? But like they always say, the fight starts standing. Mm-hmm. It's not like immediately they're going to go to the ground or anything. And have we even seen that Daukaus is just going to be able to get in there and just get him to the ground and have his way? Didn't work, you know, against some of the other guys, you know. So I don't know. I mean, they always talk about the matchmaking. This one leaves my head scratching because I don't understand how you give him Kevin Holland after a loss.
I know, like if it was,
it doesn't make any sense.
I'm telling you, it was such a head scratcher to me too. Plus, like I said, I thought maybe they'd give Kevin Holland somebody that's just a pure striker. You know what I mean? To like let him kind of build back up a little bit. So both these guys, it's just like, I mean, I guess that's good matchmaking when it seems like bad matchmaking for both guys. You know, it's not an easy fight. It doesn't favor either guy. But I'm intrigued by this one for sure.
Should be a good one.
I like Alex Oliveira versus Nico Price. I mean, we don't even have to talk about that. There's no way that fight's not going to be absolute bonkers.
You just jinxed it.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and knock on wood anyway.
Nico's got a fight. Remember, he's making on them babies.
By the way, I should give a shout out. We broke this fight, by the way, and this is one of the most random fight breakings I've ever had.
The Oliveira Price one?
Yeah. To be honest with you, I don't worry that much about trying to report fights anymore because it's just a nonstop. There's just so much going on. But I had a fan reach out to me that was like, Hey, I was just at a signing and with I'll just show you one of the fighters in the fight. The fighter, one of those two guys, mentioned to this guy that the fight was happening, and he was just like, "So I thought you might want to know, John Morgan." And he sent it out to me, and I reached out to the property parties involved, and it was like, "Well, sure enough, he's right. That fight's signed." So I mean, it was
That's
just
awesome.
a random fan that was like, "Hey, John, check this out. I just heard this. Figured you might want to report it." I was like, "Bro, thank you. That was very cool of you, man. Thank you." So anyway, but I think that fight's going to be great. Hopefully, I didn't curse it right there. But I just don't see how those guys could be involved in a boring fight. So I'm excited for that one. Misha Cirkunov dropping down to 185 pounds. You know, we saw him on Wednesday. I didn't think he looked bad. You know, I was a little worried to see, like, oh, is this going to look rough?
Is he going to be all depleted?
Yeah,
or whatever?
He didn't. He seemed to be okay. So I don't think. Well, I mean, again, we'll see Friday morning.
Yeah, it just makes you wonder where at what point he is in his weight cut.
Yeah, he didn't look bad, that's for sure. And Jocko, of course, Jocko, by the way, came in with a little black eye, but that's that old Rich Franklin look. You know what I mean? It just means he's been working hard and can't. the
funny.
One that kind of got some added value on Media Day was Macy Chasson and Aspen Ladd. You know, this was the fight, of course, that was supposed to happen back in July. Mm-hmm. Chasson had to pull out on fight week, and if I recall, she cited injury but didn't go into it a whole lot. And I think everybody was like, BS, she wasn't going to make weight. You know what I mean? That was kind of the assumption. I mean, when you talk about getting an injury on fight week, it's like, what? Like, what could you be doing to get injured on fight week?
Yeah.
And so everybody was like, BS, she just wasn't going to make weight, so she pulled out. She told us a story that we knew that that wasn't the case, but it wasn't, you know, some things we, you know, not sure what the athlete wants to share public or that sort of thing. But she told a story this week that basically she had hurt herself. She had a stress fracture in her foot like 3 weeks out, thought she could fight through it, and then it came fight week, and she was just kind of warming up and hit a bad kick, and the pain was just unbearable, and she couldn't walk, and she was like, you know, obviously I'm going to need my feet to kind of defend takedowns and stuff against Aspen Ladd. But so anyway, a little bit of bad blood between them as Aspen was certainly frustrated. Remember, that was Aspen's big comeback after her knee surgery and all that. So she, you know, to have to delay that, she was pissed off. And she didn't have the nicest things to say. And Macy certainly saw that and was like, thought it was a little bit classless. You know, she's like, I'm not saying it's personal, but I thought I didn't really like what she had to say. So, you know, this is a fight that I personally think favors Aspen Ladd just because I think her grappling is so damn good. But Macy Chasson is big.
Yep.
She's nasty, and she's pissed off right now. So this could have a little flavor to it.
Yeah, and I mean, I thought you made a good point too. You know, Conor was saying when you brought up Conor McGregor and how Conor said he had a stress fracture leading into it, and you saw what happened to his foot. You know, so if that is in fact true, like she says, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. But yeah, a lot of us had questions about that one, but. Yeah, I mean, her coming in, she's just so strong. But Aspen's kind of got that strength that it's not shown immediately when you look at her.
Yeah.
You look at her and you're like, oh, she's a bit undersized, you know.
And then she takes you down
and then
sits
she takes
on
you down,
starts
and
beating
then they
the
can't
piss
get
out
up.
Of you.
They can't get up, you know. I stuck with my original pick from the last time, which was Macy Chasson. I thought if she could keep it on the feet, I thought that, you know, and maybe it's homering, I don't know. But I just feel like I think that she has the potential to break out at some point. I just don't know when that would be. If this could be that fight, this would do
It'd be huge for her.
Loads for her cred, I guess, within the UFC and what she's capable of doing. But you're right. Now, I mean, now as you sort of talk about Aspen being on top, it's funny when I go back in the memories in my head of every fight I've seen of her, there's always a vision of her on top of her opponent just bringing
nasty
down, bringing
ground
down,
and pound.
Ground and pound, and I don't know. Macy's strong in this. I think she has the ability, at least early on, to get her off of her if it does come to that, just by in terms of the sheer size that she has.
Yep.
But as the rounds go on and that keeps happening, at some point they just all wear down.
That's it. You can't get frustrated. You got to keep your mental focus and you got to keep doing everything technically perfect. Otherwise, you're going to end up in your back because Aspen is going to be relentless coming at you.
She is technically really, really fucking spectacular.
Yeah.
And now I'm second guessing my pick. But
it's got a little flavor in it. So I think the main card is going to be really, really good. Mike Breeden steps in against Alexander Hernandez. We didn't get to talk to those guys because Breeden, I think, was a little bit late arriving to camp, or not to camp, but to the fight week. Prelims, not bad either. You got intriguing one, I think, Casey O'Neill. A lot of people high on Casey O'Neill against Antonina Shevchenko. Of course, has been training alongside her sister for her camp. Betch Kohea, I believe this is her retirement fight. So I think this is the last time we'll see Betch Kohea. Jamie Mullarkey, Devontae Smith looks like it could be fun. We got a chance to speak to Gaetano Pereo. Unexpectedly, he just showed up to our media day. They did not have the best translator available. Yeah. We got some words from him. I'm pretty sure we only got about 25% of what he had to say. Yeah. And I wasn't necessarily incredibly ready to interview him anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, you just roll with the punches. So, yeah, he'll be there. Johnny Eduardo versus Alejandro Perez could be a fun fight to start things out. So, listen, I think it's going to be a fun UFC card on Saturday. Cold Coffee will be there for us at MMA Junkie, so we'll have full coverage over there. Like I said, I'll be watching it on TV with the rest of you cats, and I'll stop by with an and a half afterwards. Of course, this isn't the only big MMA event this weekend. Bellator 267 is Friday. So it's kind of early in the day. I think prelims are at 1 p.m. Eastern. Main card starts at 4 p.m. Eastern, obviously, because it's over in England. The great Simon Head is on board. So he's doing a little freelance work for us. Obviously, a former member of the Junkie team, so I was happy to see him doing some freelance work. Abby Saban is over there. I mean, honestly.
Saban?
Honestly, I think that's a deep cut there. I think, you know, kind of a big weekend for everybody there. You know, I mean, they haven't been doing events over in England, yeah. You know, and they're starting to get that's back true. To it. Fans in the building. Obviously, Cage Warriors is actually doing a trilogy event this week with fans as well. But, you know, I know everybody's excited. You know, we've been doing events with fans for a while now. I think this is the first one for over there in London. So I think there's a lot of people excited. I will say, you know, I won't go super deep on the card because I think the event will be happening or will already happen when a lot of people are listening to this. But I do want to say I'm very, very intrigued by the main event, Douglas Lima versus Michael Venom Page. You know, we talked about it a little bit on Spinning Backlick this week, a little debate over who needs this more. And I think it's a really, really interesting question because Douglas Lima is certainly the more overall respected martial artist. You know, he's a former champ. It wasn't that long ago that he was going for champ status. He lost that fight, and then he lost his belt shortly after, so he's not a champ anymore. But, so now he's on a little bit of a slide, but we're talking about losing to absolute top-level competition. Meanwhile, Michael Venom Page, a guy that is 19-1, and yet, and fairly, so, I think the debate is understandable where people say, look, this guy has fought nothing but cans. Now, that's a little strong to say nothing but cans. But I get the argument in that he hasn't been tested a whole lot. He has been given a very friendly strength of schedule along the way. I mean, yes, you know, there's some tough ones. I mean, David Rickles is a tough guy. He absolutely handled him. He did face Paul Daly, not the greatest fight of all time, but he did win there. You know, there's some tests along the way. But the one big one, the real elite one, was Douglas Lima. And, of course, he got knocked out. Now, it was a weird knockout, if you remember. Obviously, it was that highlight reel knockout, but it was from an odd angle. I'm not saying that you never want to say it's lucky because a man's throwing a shot to land, and it did. But it was just kind of a freak occurrence. So, you know, if Michael Venom Page loses this one, I think people continue to say, like, every time you face elite-level competition, you lose, and you're not very good. So I'm torn on who needs this one more, but I think the stakes here are really big for both these guys. I don't want to say a career crossroads, but in terms of terms of reputation and belief, it's a big moment for both these guys.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, who did you pick in this one?
I picked Lima.
I did too. But I guess we say it all the time. I like what guys say leading into the fight weeks because I'm always like, oh man, I was really taken by what so and so said. In the interview with Simon Head, you know, Paige says, like, I'm a totally different guy. That was a younger, you know, version, like, that he's matured.
Right.
And it's kind of like what we were just saying about Johnny Walker. If that is true and, and he's doing all the things. I mean, he would go in and just starch dudes, and he was just playing around half the time. And then he got caught, you know, and he lost that fight, you know. And you'd like to think that if he would stay uber focus and maybe, I mean, I guess a part of that is why he is so fun to watch. You'd think that if maybe he went in there and didn't do all that stuff, you know, he would be unstoppable. But that is
that's part of what makes him him.
So I just think that, you know, it's hard to, as much as we've seen cats do rematches, and often we'll see a fighter get those wins back. I don't know, man. Lima is just, he's He's a beast, man. And I think if he has the confidence and he knows in his head, I beat this kid once, I could do it again.
That's what I think. And I think he feels like he's got stuff to prove right now.
And that's it. Like you said, this is that fight that'll tell him, you know, have I dropped from where I was before, and am I really declining? And I think I'm imagining that this training camp for him was uber focused, and this was something that meant more to him than it did to Paige, because I think Paige is just like trying to get back up, but he always feels that he's great or whatever. But I just feel like this probably meant more for Lima in terms of, I think he sees the father time, and he realizes that, you know, am I declining, am I going down, or am I still the best?
It's going to tell me where I stand,
thing.
Right?
This is going to tell me where I stand.
Not only is it going to tell us, it's going to tell him too.
Yeah,
it's going to tell him too. It's a big one. It's a
man,
big man.
So you
event.
Didn't pick him either.
I did.
I'm never going to catch up to you now.
Hey man, you know,
I didn't even look at your picks because I don't
show.
Want because I
you
don't
can't.
Want to. I
you
don't
do
want
that.
To like let it convince me to just do it.
So for people that don't know, our staff picks. You know, obviously Cole Coffey, a former champion. I've never won the damn thing,
yeah.
even though I've been from the very beginning. I've always been in like second or third every year. I've never been out of the top, but I've never won. But we all have a group email, so our picks are on a group email. So
yeah.
if you want to, you can do a
thread.
Little gamesmanship
yeah.
and see what other people are picking. But I think honestly, when you start doing picks that way, it ends up screwing you even worse. Like
yeah.
you just got to go with your sentiment, not like oh, because then you're trying to pick which one is not really what you think. But I think
right.
maybe there's a chance that I have a chance.
That's what I did the last couple
yeah.
weeks. That doesn't work out.
Doesn't work out. Doesn't work out. You just got to go with your pick. So you know. Fingers crossed, man. We still got 3 long months of events to go, but I've got a lead right now, and I would like to get my first little trophy next
yeah,
to my name.
Yeah, get the little trophy.
I don't have a little trophy next to my name.
We don't actually get a trophy. We just
no.
get a little icon next to
our
name.
A trophy icon next to our name that means absolutely nothing. You get the big financial bonus of $0 and 0 cents. It means nothing, but I've never won, and I would like
but
to
But it's nice seeing that when you pull up the sheet or you pull up the web page and you see the past because it says what year you won. My goal now is to get that 2 year, be the
multiple
first 2 year
yeah,
champ.
That is pretty interesting too. That we have no multiple year.
Nobody's
champions.
Won it twice.
Isn't that crazy?
Nobody's won it twice. We got good picks. I mean, like, and even the readers, the viewers usually are really, really good too. What I always look at is to see who's at the top of the leaderboard and see where they are in reference to
if
the
you're
fans.
Over the fans,
yeah,
yeah.
because the fans are really good. You know, it's not like they're just picking.
Right.
I mean, half of them are probably well. 99% of them are probably more educated in the fight game than me. But it's cool. It's cool when we see that. And but, yeah, they're really, really good. But, yeah, I mean, our staff is good. I mean, our staff – it's funny because this year –
yeah, because we never had 2-time winners. I mean, I think, like, Dan won 1 year. Obviously,
yep.
Dan Stupp, founder, obviously no longer with the company.
Yep.
I think Ben – did Ben Folks win 1 year?
Ben won 1 year.
Yeah, so obviously – so a couple of the trophies have left the
yeah.
building, but we don't have no 2-time winners.
Yeah, it's crazy. But, yeah, it's always good competition. But, yeah, getting to see that little trophy is a nice little – sort of little soft – bragging rights, you can be like,
not
yeah.
bad for a videographer, huh?
Not bad.
Not bad for a guy that just sits in the back and does interviews. So listen,
that's right.
We'll have full coverage of that. Like I said, Simon Head and Abby Saban will have all that at MMA Junkie. So, man, a busy weekend. We'll have you all taken care of. I did want to share one funny story from International Fight Week, and that was at the press conference. I was ceremonial weigh-ins, I believe. I was walking over to my seat, and a Las Vegas Metro police officer was like, "Mr. Morgan." I was like, "Uh-oh." I just police scare me. I'm not gonna lie. I was not the best kid growing up, and did not always
yeah.
have the best relationship.
We finally found you, Mr. Morgan,
with the local police officers in DeSoto, Texas. But you know, whatever. I'm an older man now. I do things a little bit different. But yeah, he pulled me aside, and I was like, "Uh-oh, what happened?" And he's like, "Dude, I gotta tell you a story." He's like, "I had one amateur fight 8 years ago in Tough Enough, and you commentated on my fight." And I'm like, "Uh-oh, is this dude going to tell me, like, I was the biggest jackass ever? Like, what's he going to say?" I was like, all right. I was like, "Okay, tell me. He's like, "I knew the guy I was fighting was better than me. So what I was trying to do," he's like, "so I went in there, and I was just trying to taunt him and just doing crazy stuff, trying to piss him off, because I thought if I could get into his head and piss him off, you know, that maybe I'd have a better chance, because this guy would, you know, not be thinking clearly." And he was like, "And John Morgan, you were like, this guy has the most swagger of any 0-0 fighter I've ever seen in my life. And he said he got a big kick out of it. And like to this day, his friends still remind him, like, that's like his reputation. It was like, oh, this dude's got the most swagger of any 0-0 fighter you've ever seen. So
that's awesome. That is a great line. That is a great line.
It was a funny line, and it was cool, man. Like, I honestly love commentating, man, and to hear somebody that, you know, thinks that I did it right and that mm-hmm. it even stuck with them, man. I thought that was pretty damn funny.
Well, speaking of commentating outside of the CFFC, we should remind folks, should you want to be in Vegas for Halloween, October 31st, we'll be doing commentary for the LFC 35 Booty 3D. Booty
yes,
Camp 3D.
Sir, Booty Camp. Bring it. So if you're looking for a good night, you just met. If you're in Vegas on Halloween and you're looking for something a little different to do, you give us a holler. We'll set you up. All right. Listen, I did have one other thing. I kind of want to ask for help, honestly, and just share because we always share. But I didn't want to do it at the beginning because that would certainly bring down the mood of this particular podcast, which we try to keep very lighthearted. But we're always very, very open and honest as well. I actually went to the doctor yesterday. I don't know how to say this. I guess I've started getting tinnitus in over the last week. I've had a ringing in my ears for a week straight, and it won't go away. And yesterday I actually started getting a little bit of vertigo as well, which scared me because I had read I can't get this ringing in my ears to go away. So I've been trying to read about it on the internet. And knowing that, I probably need to go to the doctor about it. But the kind of thing that I was reading is that there's nothing you can really do about it. The scary thing is it can be an indication of future hearing loss or hearing loss to come. And that honestly scared the crap out of me because I started thinking about trying to do this job without being able to hear, which would make interviews, I guess, and stuff very difficult, and doing a podcast and things like that. So it kind of scared me a little bit. Yeah, and then I started reading about Meniere's disease, which is the thing that Dana White has. Mm-hmm. And what I read was, I remembered him talking about in the past how he would get vertigo really bad. And so when I got it yesterday, it scared me because I had read that that's what this stuff is, you know, that's an indication of it. So actually, it happened right after we finished the media day yesterday. And thankfully, there was a doctor right around the corner that would take me in. And so they've started doing some tests on me. It does look like I have some nerve damage in my ears. The doctor assured me some of that is just a part of getting older, which sucks. But the ringing in my ears is kind of distracting at some point. So anyway, if anybody's ever dealt with this, I'm starting to kind of educate myself on it. So if you have any history with tinnitus and you got any ideas of how to handle it, please let me know. But, you know, when I mentioned earlier that I was speaking to Dana, that I had actually reached out to him and said, hey, I got something weird. It has nothing to do with the fight game. Can you tell me about? And I kind of talked to him his experience with this stuff a little bit and dealing with it because it scares me a little bit, if I'm just being honest. So so if you've ever had history with this, let me know because I'd like to know I'm learning about it right now. I've got some more tests scheduled and stuff like that, but there's just nothing you can do about it, as best I can tell. You can't make it go away, but I guess there's things you can do, things you can take that supposedly help. It's not bad when I'm concentrating on something. Like if I'm actively doing something, like I haven't noticed it while we've been doing this podcast, right? Because I'm actively talking to you and I'm listening to you and we're talking and we're engaged. But like when I was driving over here, and I'm just sitting in the car, you know, like driving, it's like really bad. Or like if I'm just sitting around, it's I don't know, man. They say you get used to it, I guess, but right now I don't know how the hell you get used to it. So high-pitched ringing in the ears. So I didn't want to say that at the beginning of the podcast because it sounds it's weird. It's not fun. I guess I'm getting older. I was actually thinking about it as I was sitting in the doctor's office yesterday. Maybe it's a bit of a wake-up call to be like, hey, bro, you know how you've always treated yourself like you're immortal and this is, you can just keep doing whatever you want? Maybe this is a wake-up call that, you know, obviously it's not the worst thing ever. It's a ringing in the ears. It's not a heart attack. It's not a whatever. You know, it's not – but those things are coming if you don't start taking care of yourself. You know what I mean? So I maybe this will be the wake-up call I need. But, I am reaching out. If anybody's ever had to deal with this shit before, now as I'm sitting here talking about it, now I can hear it. Now it's driving me crazy. Yeah. So if anybody has any way to deal with it, hit me up on Twitter or whatever. My DMs are open, and I'd appreciate it.
I did see something where they say exposures to loud noises sometimes can cause it. What if your own voice caused it.
Jackass.
What if literally constant exposure to your own voice. I've had 43
years of exposure to this loud-ass voice.
Now you gotta start talking beauty. You gotta be like, yeah, like,
that's funny,
guys,
man. I needed that, dude. That's funny. Yeah, it is funny, man. Like, Tuesday night when I was at the Contender Series, like, just going in and the bass, like, for inside the Apex. Like, the music's not super loud in the Apex. It's way louder at, like, T-Mobile or something.
Yeah.
But this just started about a week ago, and, like, the bass, it was, like, really, like, I kind of heard it. So I guess maybe, like, I'm going to have to start wearing earplugs or something at the events or something. I know Steven Morocco used to wear earplugs at the events when he'd cover live, because he did music forever.
And
so he would always wear –
Try
to protect his ears. I know he would – and I kind of laughed at him because it did look kind of dorky to be sitting on press row with earplugs in, but
makes a lot of sense.
But he's the one whose ears are not ringing right now.
Yeah, it gets super super loud in there. well, hopefully they'll get that figured out. Have you ever thought? I mean, I did, you know, because the Google shows you everything. Sure. Have you ever thought like it was a, you know, this is going to give all the anti-vaxxers fuel? You ever thought there's any correlation to the vaccine?
You know what's funny is, I don't know. So I did mention this. So if you remember when I talked about getting COVID like about a month ago, I had one day. I wouldn't say that I would relate to the vaccine. I would say, unless, I don't know, you can say what you want. But I will say, and I did tell the doctor this yesterday when I was talking to him. I was like, I don't know if it's related or not, but let me tell you something kind of weird. When I was suffering the effects of COVID, which mine were incredibly minor, right? But I told everybody I had two bad days. I had one bad day where I was super exhausted. Like I woke up and I was tired. And my muscles were sore, and I just wanted to go right back to bed, and so I did. And I had another day where there was pressure in my ears, and it felt like I said, it felt like when you take off from a plane, but then you can like chew gum or do whatever, and you can pop it.
Yeah.
But I couldn't pop it, and I was getting this ring, and it was one day, and then it went away for like 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks. But about a week ago at this point, it came back. It came back during last week. During International Fight Week. And I didn't really say anything about it because I was like, it'll go away.
It'll go away. But, well, hopefully it still does. I mean, hopefully it's just a little blockage. But what did they say, like, it could be related?
The doctor did some – well, he didn't say – so I told him that. He didn't – like, I'm sure he processed it, but he didn't go like, well, yeah, that could definitely be it. You know what I mean? I was just like, just so you know timing-wise, this is what happened. He did like, some initial stuff, and they did test my hearing yesterday, and they said it's not bad. They're like, that you've lost some hearing, but it's not terrible. So that's good. He was like, it's clear you have some nerve damage, but he's like, the nerve damage doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to continue to like get worse. Keep deteriorating. Exactly. So I don't know. We got some more tests scheduled and some follow-up visits and all that. And fingers crossed, man. I guess the great thing is like there's science now, and I think they have a lot of really cool like listening devices and stuff like that. But it did kind of initially give me some panic of like, how the fuck do I do this job if I can't hear? You know,
but at least you're dealing with it right from the get-go. So hopefully they'll be able to figure something. And, I mean, best case, I mean, you know, for those that pray and do that stuff, they can just pray for, you know, that to work itself out quickly. But at least you're addressing it early on instead of, like, let it go.
Everything I read on
the
internet was, like, the faster you can get this addressed, the better you'll be.
Right.
But I still didn't go to the doctor because I was like, whatever. I'm just, to be honest with you, like, I haven't gone to a doctor in, like, 15 years. Like, I just don't. I know. Well, I mean, look, when you look at the picture of health I am, I take that back. I did go to a doctor a while back, and he was like, bro, like, come on, dude. Like, hey, you know what you need to do, right? And I was like, yes, I do know what I need to do. But when I got that vertigo yesterday, because I've never really experienced that before, that scared me a little bit to make me, like, I didn't know if I was going to be able to drive I don't know if you know, I was sitting behind you. I know you had headphones in, but I was kind of like, leaning over a little bit, like Chelsea from the PR department, like, she even saw me, and it was crazy because it happened right when we wrapped up with everything. Mm-hmm. But she was like, "Hey, are you okay? Do you need me to get you something?" And I was like, "No, I was doubled over everything was spinning and it was really crazy, man. And like, I went to go, I was like, I need some water or something, and I went to go get a bottle of water, and I couldn't walk in a straight line. You know what I mean? And so I was like. And then it was funny because my wife was helping me get the doctor's appointment set up, and she's like, "Can you drive?" I was like, "Well, it's just like driving drunk. I'll be fine." You know what I mean? And I was just trying to be silly. Like, I've done that before. Like, we're good, you know, which is terrible to say. But anyway, yeah. So it was.
Even Rocha does not condone.
I don't know. Obviously, once you're over the legal limit, get an Uber, you know, all that. But yeah, no, I was trying to be comical to keep myself positive. Whatever,
yeah.
But, But yeah. So hopefully it'll work out. Like I said, it doesn't necessarily mean a bad thing, but I did kind of think yesterday, like, maybe this is one of those wake up call moments where it's like, bro, you are 43 now, dude, and you know, it's like, it's just it ain't gonna get better.
Yeah,
it ain't gonna get better. You know what I mean? Like,
as much as they say we are fine wines maturing, we are not. We like, actually bro, just get really
cold coffee. You're not gonna believe this, man. Something just happened. My testosterone level just jumped up, bro. Like my pituitary gland just started kicking overtime, dog. And I'm out here just throwing up weights now, you know. So yeah, I should probably do this. So anyway, if you got any history with this, you know, any ways to kind of deal with it, which I think is all you can do. You can't really go get it away, but I think you can just deal with it. Please don't hesitate to reach out. And as you said, good thoughts and prayers are always appreciated. So anyway, all right, listen, I got to go finish up my notes for CFSC 101. Please turn in to USC Fight Pass before ESPN Plus this weekend. We'd love to have you over there. Usually on the stream, what we've been trying to do, we stream the prelims, which means we'll be streaming the postlims. We just started going to YouTube. And so normally what I try to do is – I try to monitor the YouTube chat as well, so I'll give some people some shout outs. Kind of the same way we do with the weigh-ins and stuff.
Yeah.
That kind of inspired me. So we broadcast on YouTube, and I'll pull my phone up right there.
That's
good. Have a little chat. Try to chat with people during the broadcast. Try to hang out with people while we're watching the fights. I mean, obviously, I still have to commentate the fights as well.
Yeah.
Does
Yanni's teeth show up?
is that not the best username
Yanni's
ever?
Johnny's teeth.
Shout out to Johnny's teeth in the chat on weigh-in days. And I should always say shout out to Mark Fellows, of course.
He's always there.
One of our biggest supporters, to say the least. So,
yeah.
Anyway, yeah, it's going to be a busy weekend. So check it out, man. We got you covered all over the place. Simon Head and Abby Saban will be at Bellator. Cole Coffey will be at the UFC. But, of course, the whole staff will be helping him with full coverage there. I will be at Cage Fury Fighting Championships on Saturday morning. So we got plenty of MMA for you. Check us all out. And, of course, if you really want to support the show, patreon.com/TheMMARoadshow. We always appreciate the extra love over there. And we try to share a little bit extra with our friends over there and supporters. We really do appreciate it. And for everybody else, regardless, let me just say, thanks for listening.